You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us today for Arapahoe County News, read by Austin. Today we will be reading the following main articles. Aurora police officer injured in stolen car chase. Pursuit policy changed in March. Aurora's best taste competition launches with global fest flavors. Women makes quilts for organ donor families. And following up with other miscellaneous articles. Sentinel, Metro. Aurora police officer injured in stolen car chase. Pursuit policy changed in March. The crash comes after Aurora's police chief eased restrictions in March on when officers can chase criminal suspects, allowing for car pursuits linked to stolen vehicles. Written by the Sentinel, May 9, 2025. There are three ads associated with this article. The first ad, Sentinel Muse. Saturday the 14th, evening yoga, Denver Botanical Gardens. Saturday the 10th, is your dog getting enough exercise for a healthy lifestyle? Moss, Denver. Saturday the 10th, can consistent routines help reduce puppy biting? The Right Room, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 10th, celebrate Mother's Day in Denver at Oakwell Beer Spa. Oakwell Beer Spa, Highlands Ranch. Saturday the 10th, Donut Stop Half Marathon, Chatfield State Park, Littleton, Colorado. Saturday the 10th, Mother's Day Blooms and Bubbles Brunch, Arvada, Colorado. And Saturday the 10th, Mother's Day 5K, Highlands Ranch, Colorado. The second ad, Denver International Airport's Snack and Souvenir Expo, Wednesday, May 21st, 2025, 7:30 a.m. at the Westin at Denver International Airport. Click for details. Pitch your products to Den concessionaire buyers. Learn how to become a kiosk operator or concessionaire. Network with Den concession partners and other businesses. The third ad. New driver flex rate. Get your first auto loan with us. The District Credit Union. There is a picture of a woman hanging out the car with her hand high in the air, enjoying the breeze. Aurora. Just weeks after Aurora police changed longstanding policies to allow officers to chase stolen car suspects, an officer was injured Friday during just such a pursuit when he crashed into a car of a bystander, police reported. The unidentified officer was taken to a nearby hospital Friday morning after the crash, suffering what police said appeared to be minor injuries. The bystander was uninjured. At about 5:45 a.m., other officers determined that a Ford F-150 Raptor pickup truck was stolen out of Denver. Those officers decided to pursue the suspect, who refused to pull over, police said. Shortly after, another officer, aware of the pursuit, headed from the north part of the city to the south, joined the chase to try and catch the pickup truck driver. A few minutes later, as that officer was southbound on South Buckley Road at East Dartmouth Avenue, with patrol car lights and sirens activated, the officer's car crashed into that of a woman not involved in the chase. The woman was not injured, police said. The driver of the pickup truck was not caught, police said. Investigators said they did not have details on the truck nor the suspect, but that the person was still at large. Police pursuit policy changed in March. The crash comes after Aurora's police chief eased restrictions in March on when officers can chase criminal suspects, allowing for car pursuits linked to stolen vehicles and drunken driving suspects, the Sentinel previously reported. Quote, over the past several years, the Aurora Police Department has not engaged in pursuits of stolen vehicles, despite auto theft being a felony offense, end quote, Aurora Police Chief Todd Chamberlain said in a statement in March. Quote, this has created a reality where offenders believe they can victimize our community with no consequence, simply fleeing from law enforcement to avoid accountability, end quote. Aurora police have for years allowed officers to pursue suspects who have committed or are committing a felony and considered a serious risk to public safety if they are not immediately apprehended. Police policy has also allowed officers to pursue a suspect committing a crime involving a firearm who the officer believes possesses a serious threat to the public, allowing police to chase suspects solely for stealing vehicles or driving under the influence were essentially the only changes to the policy, according to Aurora Police spokesperson Sydney Edwards. Fatalities, injuries, and property damages resulting from police pursuits have become increasingly controversial over the last two decades, with numerous vetted national studies warning against the dangers and costs of police pursuits. Police departments renewed pushes for relaxing pursuit policies when crime spiked in Colorado and across the nation from 2020 to 2022. Chamberlain said that despite documented reduction in car thefts in Aurora and across the metro area, he hears from residents and community leaders that people feel unsafe. Quote, "As the chief of police, my primary responsibility is ensuring the safety of the Aurora community while upholding the rights of residents not to be victimized by crime," end quote, Chamberlain said in the statement. Most national police organizations and public safety advocates cite numerous studies revealing that police pursuits are dangerous for police, suspects, and bystanders while showing little or no benefit in impacting crime rates. Quote, "There are ways to incentivize people to follow the law, apart from engaging in a dangerous police chase that is putting the lives of officers and bystanders at risk, and also putting the lives of the driver and passenger at risk who don't deserve the death penalty for fleeing because of a stolen vehicle," end quote, said Josh Parker, Deputy Director of Policy for Policing Project. A Federal Bureau of Investigation published a landmark report in 2010 saying that during police chases, 30% of suspects crashed, 30% stopped, and 25% outran the police. The report also said that the people who fled were usually accused of nonviolent crimes, with 32% driving a stolen car, 27% having a suspended driver's license, 27% wanting to avoid arrest, and 21% driving under the influence. Critics of permitting police chases say the dangers are substantial. In an Aurora carjacking police pursuit in 2024, a 24-year-old bystander died from injuries while sitting in his parked car. The suspect was being chased by police in Northwest Aurora neighborhood, hit a speed bump, lost control, and crashed into multiple parked vehicles, including the bystander's vehicle. Chamberlain said in March that officers will consider the risks and try to avert injuries to suspects, bystanders, and even themselves. Quote, "This agency remains committed to prioritizing public safety in every decision we make," end quote, Chamberlain said in the statement. Quote, "Pursuits will be conducted in a manner that weighs the risk to the community against the necessity of apprehending criminals who threaten our residents. Aurora is not a place where offenders can operate without fear of consequence," end quote. Chamberlain said the change in policy is meant to address what he perceives to people behaving as if there were no consequences to criminal behavior. Quote, "This is unacceptable," end quote, Chamberlain said in the statement. Quote, "Public safety demands a balanced approach, one that allows officers to exercise discretion in holding offenders accountable while always considering the risks associated with vehicle pursuits." Quote, "This broader policy does not mean that officers engage in reckless chases, but rather a measured and responsible approach to stopping those who exploit gaps in enforcement," end quote. Police said anyone with information can call Metro Denver Crime Stoppers at 720-913-7867. Tipsters can remain anonymous and still be eligible for a reward of up to $2,000, police said. There is one picture associated with this article. It has a few different police cars with the lights going off, as well as a crime lab van sitting in the background. Centennial, Aurora's Best Taste Competition launches with Global Fest flavors. The Best Taste Competition, through May 24th, supports local businesses and seeks Aurora's best globally inspired food. Written by the Centennial, May 8th, 2025. There are three ads associated with this article. The first ad, Centennial Muse. Saturday the 14th, Evening Yoga, Denver Botanical Gardens. Saturday the 10th, Is Your Dog Getting Enough Exercise for a Healthy Lifestyle? Moss, Denver. Saturday the 10th, Can Consistent Routines Help Reduce Puppy Biting? The Right Room, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 10th, Celebrate Mother's Day in Denver at Oakwell Beer Spa. Oakwell Beer Spa, Highlands Ranch. Saturday the 10th, Donut Stop Half Marathon, Chatfield State Park, Littleton, Colorado. Saturday the 10th, Mother's Day Blooms and Bubbles Brunch, Arvada, Colorado. And Saturday the 10th, Mother's Day 5K, Highlands Ranch, Colorado. The second ad, Denver International Airport's Snack and Souvenir Expo, Wednesday, May 21st, 2025, 7:30 a.m. at the Westin at Denver International Airport. Click for details. Pitch your products to Den concessionaire buyers. Learn how to become a kiosk operator or concessionaire. Network with Den concession partners and other businesses. The third ad, New Driver Flex Rate, Get Your First Auto Loan with Us, the District Credit Union. There is a picture of a woman hanging out the car with her hand high in the air, enjoying the breeze. Aurora. What's it going to be, Aurora? Prize Korean corn dogs or the spiciest grilled chicken you've ever eaten? It's time for Aurora's Global Flavors Food Competition, part of Aurora's annual Global Fest coming next month. The Best Taste Competition, through May 24th, supports local businesses and seeks Aurora's best globally inspired food, according to a city statement. Quote, the public is invited to visit participating businesses, purchase and taste the featured items that showcase a world of flavors, and vote for their favorites, end quote, officials said. The winners will be announced June 14th at Global Fest on the Great Lawn of the Aurora Municipal Center, 15151 East Almeida Parkway. Quote, celebrating its 12th year, Global Fest is an annual celebration organized by the City of Aurora that engages and infuses culture and community, end quote, the statement said. Quote, including an array of art, music, dance, and fashion, this festival is a unique opportunity to experience. End quote. This year's Best Taste participants are Angry Chicken, Angry Mango Shake and Original Wings, Aroma de Brazil, Brazilian Passion Fruit Lemonade and Grilled Picanha, Coffee Story, Dongguna Coffee and Korean Corn Dog, Gangnam GT, Jambong Pasta, Honeybee Asian Bistro and Sushi, Tsunami Roll, Kickin' Chicken, Chicken Katsu, Lady D's Authentic Nigerian Cuisine, Stewed Black-Eyed Beans with Spinach, Lizaikaya, Uni Pasta and Japanese Shu Cream Puff, Momo Dumplings, Momo, Pollo Picante, Pollo Asado, Pisco's Sour Restaurant and Lounge, Mahi Mahi a lo Macho, The Tofu Story, Tofu Puree, Thank Stool Poka, Thank Stool Poka Lychee Punch and 80s Bento Box, Soul K Barbecue and Hot Pot, L.A. Galbi. Details about participating items and locations are available at auroragov.org/globalflavors. Last year, the top three winners were Sweet Pepper Kitchen with their jollof rice, Honeybee Asian Bistro and Sushi with their signature flaming tiger roll, and Lady D's Authentic Nigerian Cuisine Heritage Red Beef Stew. Stories featuring past top winners are at auroratv.org. There is one picture associated with this article, with the following description. mahi-mahi a lo mako. Fresh mahi-mahi is buttermilk battered and fried with shrimp, calamari, and green-lipped mussels in a rich, creamy seafood sauce, served with white steamed rice by Isco Sour Restaurant and Lounge. Centennial Metro. Saudi national convicted in 2006 of enslaving, sexually abusing Aurora housekeeper, now set for deportation. Quote, returning this convicted felon and sex offender to his home country ensures he will not be able to prey on anyone else in our community, end quote. Written by the Centennial, May 9th, 2025. There are three ads associated with this article. The first ad, Centennial Muse. Saturday the 14th, evening yoga, Denver Botanical Gardens. Saturday the 10th, is your dog getting enough exercise for a healthy lifestyle? Moss, Denver. Saturday the 10th, can consistent routines help reduce puppy biting? The Right Room, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 10th, celebrate Mother's Day in Denver at Oakwell Beer Spa. Oakwell Beer Spa, Highlands Ranch. Saturday the 10th, Donut Stop Half Marathon, Chatfield State Park, Littleton, Colorado. Saturday the 10th, Mother's Day Blooms and Bubbles Brunch, Arvada, Colorado. And Saturday the 10th, Mother's Day 5K, Highlands Ranch, Colorado. The second ad, Denver International Airport's Snack and Souvenir Expo, Wednesday, May 21st, 2025, 7:30 a.m. at the Westin at Denver International Airport. Click for details. Pitch your products to Den concessionaire buyers. Learn how to become a kiosk operator or concessionaire. Network with Den concession partners and other businesses. The third ad, new driver FlexRate, get your first auto loan with us, the District Credit Union. There is a picture of a woman hanging out the car with her hand high in the air, enjoying the breeze. Aurora. A Saudi national convicted and jailed nearly two decades ago for imprisoning and sexually abusing his housekeeper in Aurora was resentenced Tuesday and is now set to be deported. Hamadan Al-Turki, 56, pleaded guilty to 11 amended counts of attempted unlawful sexual contact involving physical force and was sentenced to 6 years on each count to be served concurrently. The sentence, already completed because of his time served, led to his release from state prison and transfer to ICE agents for immediate deportation to Saudi Arabia. Quote, returning this convicted felon and sex offender to his home ensures that he will not be able to prey on anyone else in our community, end quote, 18th Judicial District Attorney Amy Patton said in a statement. Al-Turki was originally accused of holding his Indonesian-born housekeeper captive in the basement of his Aurora home and repeatedly molesting her between 2000 and 2004. He was convicted in 2006 of multiple charges, including false imprisonment, extortion, and felony sexual contact involving force. And he received a sentence of 28 years to life in prison, the Centennial reported in 2006. Al-Turki, a linguist who attended Colorado State University, was living in Aurora when he was indicted by an Arapaho County jury in 2005. He was charged with repeatedly raping his housekeeper, but the jury convicted him on a lesser charge of unlawful sexual contact. Prosecutors allege the housekeeper spent 4 years cooking and cleaning for the Al-Turki family while sleeping on a mattress on the basement floor and getting paid less than $2 a day. Al-Turki was accused of hiding her passport in an effort to keep her captive. He denied the allegations, saying he was a victim of anti-Muslim sentiment stemming from the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. The case garnered international attention and reportedly angered Saudi authorities at the time. It prompted the U.S. State Department to send then-Colorado Attorney General John Southers to Saudi Arabia to meet with royal leaders and Al-Turki's family after the Al-Turki's conviction. Al Turkey's lawyers have repeatedly argued that Al Turkey refused to participate in a mandated Colorado prison sex offender program. Al Turkey said his refusal was religiously based because it required him to look at photos of women in bathing suits or undergarments. He also said he would be forced to confess to his crimes, which lawyers said he could not do because he was then challenging his conviction. Saudi officials at the time said their sex offender program would involve Al Turkey's family and would incorporate religious and cultural education, which they said that could not happen in Colorado. Despite becoming eligible for parole in 2011, Al Turkey remained imprisoned after continuing to refuse to participate in the Colorado mandated sex offender treatment programs. Over the years, he has filed numerous legal motions, most recently alleging that his trial attorneys had failed to properly understand jury instructions related to the elevation of misdemeanor sexual contact charges to felonies. A state district judge granted a hearing that allows convicted defendants to challenge their sentences based on ineffective counsel or other constitutional violations. During the hearing, Al Turkey's current lawyers and prosecutors reached an agreement to amend the sexual contact convictions and enter guilty pleas to reduce charges. Quote, Mr. Al Turkey raised Sixth Amendment concerns that his trial attorneys failed to adequately research Colorado statutes, end quote, Chief 18th Judicial District Deputy D.A. Ann Tomczyk said in a statement. Quote, given the 19 years already served, the challenges in retrying the case and the pending deportation, this was the most appropriate resolution, end quote. The 2006 jury convictions on false imprisonment, theft, and extortion were left in place, officials said. Al Turkey was taken into ICE custody Tuesday for deportation proceedings. The Associated Press contributed to this report. There are two pictures associated with this article. The first picture is Haman Al Turkey, 56, standing with a green shirt and a long gray beard, with the height in his background standing at a height of 6 foot 6 inches. The second picture has the following description. Sarah Konisian, left, and her husband Hamadian Al Turkey, right, both Saudi citizens, arrived at the Arapaho County Courthouse in Centennial, Colorado, in this May 12, 2006 file photo. The linguist was convicted of sexually assaulting a housekeeper and keeping her a virtual slave for 4 years in Aurora. AP file photo, Ed Andresky. In addition of the Littleton Independent, Centennial Citizen Independent, Volume 24, Issue 23, Week of May 8, 2025. Woman makes quilts for organ donor families. Elaine McFarland learned skill after retiring from Denver Health. Written by Isabel Guzman. Isabel at cotln.org. The steady hum of a long-arm quilting machine fills a quiet room as Elaine McFarland stitches together squares of fabric, each one uniquely designed to honor someone who gave the ultimate gift of life by donating organs. For McFarland, every quilt is more than a patchwork of colors. It's a tribute to the families who gave her husband 2 kidneys and 12 additional years of life. Quote, there aren't enough words to express the gratitude I have for the families who donated their loved ones' organs, end quote, she said. Quote, it's just overwhelming, so I feel like this is one way I can give back to them, end quote. McFarland, a resident of the Littleton area, discovered quilting after retiring from Denver Health in 2000. She invested in a long-arm quilting machine, a specialized tool that streamlines the process of creating large quilts by allowing the sewing head, much longer than that of a traditional sewing machine, to glide over the fabric and stitch intricate designs with the help of computer guidance. While a typical sewing machine head measures around 9 inches, McFarland's long arm boasts a 26-inch head, making it ideal for large, detailed projects. Quote, when I got my long arm in 2009, somebody approached me and said that she had a church group that wanted to start sewing for this organization called Donor Alliance, and I said, stop right there. I don't care what you need, I'm in, she said. The Donor Alliance is a nonprofit that facilitates organs and tissue donations in Colorado and most of Wyoming. That moment sparked the creation of the Donor Family Quilt Project in partnership with the Donor Alliance. McFarland and a team of volunteers began crafting quilts to be given to donor families. In 2012, ICU nurse Diane Van Gleiter joined the effort after noticing the quilts while she was working and quickly became an essential part of the project. That year, the group completed 66 quilts. The quilt makers are provided with notes about the donor, such as if they were a fan of a specific sports team, to customize the quilt. Quote, I had a woman who lost her husband tell me the quilt was going to be her travel buddy and keep her warm on chilly flights, end quote, McFarland said. Quote, they had the perfect quilt for the donor because the quilt had butterflies and the donor loved butterflies, end quote. In addition to volunteering to make the quilts, most of the fabrics used to make the quilts are donated. The Donor Alliance will step in and provide other materials for the quilts, such as the stuffing, also known as the batting, and the backing quilts when needed. Quote, this is just one way that we share our gratitude through this quilt that's lovingly made by Elaine that provides the little light during a difficult time, end quote, said Cheryl Talley, Director of Public Relations and Communications for the Donor Alliance. Each quilt also comes with a note from the Alliance that states that volunteers made the quilts and, quote, hope that it will provide you with the warmth of our caring thoughts in the days and weeks to come, end quote. In 2024, the Donor Family Quilt Project made 370 quilts and accrued over 5,500 volunteer hours. According to the Donor Alliance, that year, 311 organ donors in Colorado were able to provide 947 life-saving transplants. Quote, I hope the charity continues to grow, end quote, McFarland said. Quote, the quilting ladies are so touched when I tell them what happens with the quilts. I don't see it ending, end quote. Over 1,300 Coloradoans are currently waiting for life-saving transplants, according to the Organ Procurement and Transportation Network. According to the Donor Alliance, one donor can save up to 8 lives and heal more than 75 others. Anyone can register to be a donor, regardless of age or medical history. Colorado residents can register when obtaining or renewing driver's licenses or at donatelifecolorado.org. There are two pictures associated with this article. The first picture has the following description. Sample quilts that are provided to the donor families, courtesy of Elaine McFarland. The picture is of a quote with different designs that include colors like red, blue, pink, purple, orange, and have many different designs on them. The second picture has the following description. Elaine McFarland started her charity, the Donor Family Quilt Project, in partnership with Donor Alliance in 2009, courtesy of Elaine McFarland. The picture is showcasing Elaine holding up and standing behind many of her different made quilts, which also include bright reds, blues, pinks, and greens, and many different flower and star designs. Arapaho panel to oversee 1A funds. County launches resident committee after voters approve Tabor override. Written by Elizabeth Slay, eslay at coloradocommunitymedia.com. The Arapaho County Board of Commissioners has officially ratified the creation of a Resident Advisory Committee, RAC, a new body designed to provide transparency, accountability, and community input on voter-approved funds tied to Issue 1A. Quote, the RAC fulfills the county's promise of accountability and community input on using the ballot measure 1A money that voters approved last November, end quote, Jill McGranahan, the county's public information officer, said. Quote, the RAC will be given the opportunity to review all the needs in Arapaho County and have direct input on how these additional funds from 1A are used to address them, end quote. During the 2024 general election, Arapahoe County voters approved ballot Measure 1A, which grants the county the ability to remove certain revenue and spending limits imposed by the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, TABOR. Quote, this approval allows Arapahoe County to collect, retain, and spend revenue that exceeds the limitations outlined in Article X, Section 20 of the Colorado Constitution, end quote, McGranahan said. The committee was approved during the commissioner's April 22nd meeting. A total of 10 members will serve on the committee. Quote, like all Arapahoe County boards and commissions, residents applied to be on the committee, end quote, McGranahan said. Quote, county commissioners interviewed applicants and selected members to represent the diverse geography, demographics, perspectives, districts, and age groups of Arapahoe County. Members were selected from among approximately 35 applicants, end quote. Five committee members will represent individual commissioner districts, and five members will serve at large. Each member has been appointed to an initial staggered term to maintain continuity. Following these initial appointments, members may be reappointed by the commissioners to serve up to two additional 3-year terms. In its first phase, the RAC will review the county strategic plan and assess the essential services funded by 1A. The primary goal is to make sure that the way in which the county invests the funds aligns with what residents want and benefits communities across the county. Resident Advisory Committee members in term expirations. District 1, Philip A. McCart II, term expires April 21st, 2026. Janet Becker World, term expires April 21st, 2028. District 2, Andrew Lanzi, term expires April 21st, 2028. Lula Goldbert, term expires April 21st, 2027. District 3, Daniel Young Combo, term expires April 21st, 2027. Roberta Robin Shinke, term expires April 21st, 2028. District 4, Vera Edom, term expires April 21st, 2026. Maya Wheeler, term expires April 21st, 2028. District 5, Kirk Menzarnaes, term expires April 21st, 2026. Edie Summers, term expires April 21st, 2027. Quote, with these additional funds, the county has a unique opportunity to invest in long-term fiscal sustainability, improve service delivery, and address critical needs, end quote, McGranahan said. Littleton Independent, Volume 136, Issue 40, Week of May 8, 2025. State preschool enrollment high, but quality guardrails lag. Written by Am Shimke, Chalk Beach, Colorado. Colorado's popular universal preschool program has dramatically increased the number of 4-year-olds who get state-funded preschool, but it's unfolded largely without guardrails to ensure quality. A report released by the National Institute for Early Education Research at Rutgers University highlights these twin realities and provides a more detailed look at where Colorado stands compared to other states. Overall, the reports suggest that Colorado has prioritized quantity over quality as it moved from a small tuition-free preschool program for children with certain risk factors to one that's open to all 4-year-olds. The state's universal preschool enrollment numbers are impressive, with 70% of eligible children enrolled last year. That number helped Colorado leapfrog from its previous ranking of 27 to 3rd in this year's, quote, State of Preschool, end quote, report. Only Washington, D.C. and Vermont had a larger share of 4-year-olds enrolled in public preschool programs last year. Leaders at the Research Institute noted that California added more 4-year-olds to state-funded preschool than Colorado last year, 35,000 compared with 30,000. But Colorado made far bigger gains than California when it comes to the percentage of children served. Quote, the progress of Colorado made it in terms of enrollment and expanding access was pretty remarkable, end quote, said Allison Fredman Krause, an associate research professor at the Institute. But Colorado showing deteriorated in the quality standards department. In the latest report, it only meets 2 of the 10 benchmarks, down from 4 in the previous preschool program. The benchmarks, which describe state policies that promote high-quality classrooms, touch on factors such as teacher training, curriculum, and class size. Colorado officials plan to put in new rules governing universal preschool quality in place, but plan to postpone the start date by a year to July 2026. It's the third time the rules have been delayed. Quote, they kicked the can down the road one more time, end quote, said W. Stephen Barnett, senior co-director of the Institute. Don Odine, the state universal preschool program director, acknowledged that the state has delayed the rules, but said Barnett's statement is misleading because Colorado has been working on efforts related to quality for a long time and continues to do so. She described the state's approach as, quote, going slow to go fast, end quote. Colorado leaders repeatedly pledged that universal preschool would provide high-quality classes, starting when they pitched the program to voters who approved a nicotine tax in 2020 to help fund it. But currently, the, quote, universal preschool, end quote, label doesn't indicate anything about the caliber of classroom a child will join. Rather, it simply indicates the state is paying for 10 to 30 hours of class time. Of about 2,000 preschools participating in the program, some are excellent and have high state ratings, some are weak and only meet basic health and safety standards, and some are in between. Experts say high-quality preschools can produce short and long-term benefits for kids. In the report, Colorado got credit for meeting 2 quality benchmarks, having a set of early learning and development standards, and providing guidance to preschools on curriculum. While the state has not yet released a list of curriculum approved for use in universal preschool classrooms, that is slated to happen sometime this year. Texas, Wisconsin, and Indiana are the only other states to hit only 2 of the Institute's preschool quality benchmarks. More than a dozen states and Washington, D.C. meet 9 or 10 of the benchmarks. They include 2 of Colorado's neighbors, New Mexico and Oklahoma. Colorado didn't meet benchmarks requiring class size caps of 20 and staff-student ratios of 1 to 10. Both limits have prompted heated debate over the last 2 years. Some private providers have argued they'll lose money if they have to reduce class sizes below the state's current cap of 24 and ratios below the current limit of 1 staff member for every 12 4-year-olds. By the 2027-2028 school year, state officials do plan to require the class size and ratio caps recommended by the Research Institute for Universal Preschool. There's one big exception, though. Preschools that have 1 of the 2 top state ratings will be allowed to stick with current caps. Colorado also didn't meet benchmarks related to these types of credentials teachers or assistant teachers should have, or annual training and coaching for staff. Lisa Roy, executive director of the Colorado Department of Early Childhood, which administers the universal preschool program, said when Colorado's rules on preschool quality are fully implemented over the next few years, she anticipates the state will meet at least half of the Institute's benchmarks. Odine noted that the Institute's 10 benchmarks look at, quote, outputs, end quote, but that Colorado is focused on child outcomes. Quote, what families tell us consistently, and educators too, is that those outcomes are what's a priority, and that's not contemplated in the NIEER ratings, end quote, she said, referring to the Institute's acronym. The Institute's report describes its benchmarks as a, quote, a set of minimum criteria established by state policy needed to ensure effectiveness of preschool education programs, end quote. Barnett said Colorado parents should think carefully before moving their children away from a high-quality program that's not part of the state's universal program to a low-quality provider that is. Quote, when people did that in Quebec in response to a $10 a day child care, kids' development suffered for a decade, end quote, he said. Barnett was referring to an effort begun in the 1990s that offered highly discounted childcare to Quebec families. While the effort allowed more women to join the workforce, many children were put in low-quality centers. Subsequent studies found negative impacts on children, including increased anxiety and aggression. A 2019 study that revealed additional negative outcomes as the children became teens and young adults concluded, quote, our findings provide strong support for the argument that the early childhood development environment is a crucial determinant of the long-term success of children, end quote. Reprinted with permission from Chalkbeat, a nonprofit news site covering educational change in public schools. Sign up for their newsletters at ckbe.at/newsletters. There is one picture associated with this article with the following description. A new report from the National Institute for Early Educators Research at Rutgers University ranks Colorado high for preschool access, but not for quality standards. Photo by Jamea Peck, Chalkbeat. The picture is a bunch of different colorful mugs, including red, green, blue, orange, yellow, brown, and so on, that all have correlating crayons inside of them of red, brown, purple, green, blue. Mother of boy allegedly abused on bus runs for LPS board. Jess Vestal says no one is representing special education. Written by Isabel Guzman, isabel@cotln.org. For Jess Vestal, the decision to run for Littleton Public Schools Board of Education came out of necessity. Quote, this whole experience with the boys being abused on the bus and everything that has happened thereafter has really shown me that there's no one who is representing special education within the Littleton District, end quote, she said. This November, voters will decide on three candidates to fill open seats out of the five on the Littleton Board of Education. Vestal's main reason for running for the school board stems from incidents in the 2023-2024 school year when her son, Dax, along with multiple other nonverbal students, were coming home on an LPS school bus from spending the day at the Joshua School in Inglewood, which specializes in special education with unknown injuries and unusual behavior. Quote, oftentimes after school, he was inconsolable for hours, end quote, Vestal wrote on the essay. On March 19, 2024, Vestal was shown footage of a former Littleton Public Schools bus, para Kira Jones, allegedly abusing Dax on the bus rides to and from Joshua School, which sent her life into a new phase. Jones is charged with 13 criminal counts and is awaiting trial. Since that day, Dax no longer attends the Joshua School, and the alleged abuse case has become widely publicized, gaining social media and national media attention. Multiple parents started contacting Vestal, hoping she could help them navigate their issues with the district's special education system. Quote, I've had dozens of families reach out to me, asking for help with being able to get accommodations for their kids or getting severe pushback when asking for the bare minimum, end quote, she said. The bare minimum, according to Vestal, is to provide adequate support for students who are autistic and nonverbal. Quote, I would like to be a person that can give all of those families a voice, and they don't typically get one, so I'm happily to do it if I am elected, end quote, Vestal said. During the months leading up to the election in November, Vestal anticipates her goals will continue to solidify as this will be her first time running a campaign. At the core of her goals, Vestal aims to bridge the communication gap between the school staff and home. Quote, there's so much lost communication in that gray area, especially for kids in special education, end quote, she said. Quote, a lot of the time, they can't come home and tell you, oh, so-and-so was being mean to me today, or I sat alone at lunch today. So as parents, we really rely on the school staff to be that communicative piece for us, end quote. In addition to strengthening communication among the board, staff and parents, LPS declining enrollment is another issue Vestal hopes to address and find solutions to. About 13,110 students were enrolled in the district for the 2024-2025 school year, according to the Colorado Department of Education. About 1,800 of those students are enrolled in special education programs. The total enrollment number has been steadily declining since 2019, when enrollment was 14,988. Quote, I've spoken to enough parents to know that, at least in the special education community, a big issue with enrollment is that we just don't feel safe. We don't feel accounted for, and we don't feel prioritized because our kids need extra help. And it feels like this is a big problem for the district, end quote, Vestal said. By ensuring the schools within LPS are safe for all children, especially those in special education, Vestal hopes to boost enrollment numbers. Quote, parents don't want their kids to be out of school. I would love for my child to be back in a classroom and be with peers where I know that he's growing and developing in a safe space. And not that it's just the case, so my kid will not go there until that is the case. And that's what I've heard from other families as well, end quote, she said. Vestal said supporting school staff is critical to maintaining safe standards and hopes to prioritize increased salaries for special education staff. Quote, it's a very hard job to support kids with special education services, and the pay rate does not reflect the long list of duties that they are expected to do, end quote, she said. Since that day in March last year, when she learned of the alleged abuse on the bus, Vestal described doubting her own judgment of character. Vestal said she and Jones texted each other frequently with updates about the bus running late and shifts in Dak's behavior. An hour after viewing the footage of her son's alleged abuse, Vestal said that Jones texted her to say that she quit her job. Quote, I trusted her. I can't take anyone at face value anymore, end quote, Vestal said. Quote, but I think that it's almost kind of better to be less trusting than too trusting. As far as being on the board, it would let me get my hands on policy as far as what the requirements and qualifications look like for paraprofessionals, end quote. Vestal may be more skeptical than she has been before, which she believes is an asset to her qualifications to be on the LPS board. Quote, that would be a silver lining out of this experience. There's always going to be the bad guys who aren't going to tell you they're bad guys. You can't train someone to not abuse kids if somebody has that as their prerogative. They're going to try to achieve that no matter what. But if we've raised qualifications and pay rate and expect more out of these people, then it will weed those bad ones out, end quote. Three board terms are ending and will be up for election this fall. There is one picture associated with this article with the following description. Jess Vestal is running for LPS Board of Education this November, and it is a picture of Jess with a face shot of herself. There is also one ad on the page. Congrats, grads! Red Rocks Community College is proud to announce the celebration of its 55th annual commencement on Saturday, May 17th, beginning at the 10 a.m. at the Outdoor Pavilion on the RRCC Lakewood campus. Celebrate with us as we honor our graduates. Red Rocks Community College, Lakewood, Arvada, and online. There's four graduates standing in the picture with trees and mountains in the background in their red gowns and red capes with orange banners over their shoulders. Remove books are back in libraries for now. Elizabeth School District still in legal battle with ACLU. Written by Nikki Quinby, special to Colorado Community Media. 19 titles removed from Elizabeth School District libraries last year have been returned to circulation for now as a result of an April 28th court order, but the books will be on a sensitive topics list so parents can opt out of allowing their children to access them. Superintendent Dan Snowberger told Colorado Community Media, the order from the U.S. 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver upheld District Judge Charlotte Sweeney's preliminary injunction ordering the school district to return the books to library shelves. The appeals court had temporarily granted the district's request for a stay of Sweeney's injunction, but then ruled that the stay was unjustified. However, the legal battle between the ACLU of Colorado and the Elizabeth School District is far from over, and the ultimate outcome of the ACLU's lawsuit seeking to keep the books in the libraries permanently has not been decided. The ACLU sued the district last December, seeking the return of 19 library books that the ESD board had voted to permanently remove 3 months earlier. It was later revealed that the district discarded the books at the time. The ACLU alleges that the removal violates First Amendment rights and is based on partisan politics. The school district maintains the content in the books does not support ESD's curriculum and contains graphic content. Snowberger said the school district is disappointed in the April 28th order. Quote, although the 10th Circuit denied the stay, it will proceed with our appeal. We feel confident that the problematic context of these books will be exposed during the appeal, end quote, he told the Colorado Community Media. Quote, in the meantime, we will respect and comply with the lower court's order. We are in the process of obtaining copies of the books now, since they are no longer in the district's possession, end quote. The books that were then returned to the shelves on May 1st. Quote, because the books were identified as books containing sensitive topics, end quote, Snowberger went on, quote, they will be placed on the sensitive topics list so that parents who have chosen to opt their children out of sensitive content will be able to do so as this case plays out, end quote. Tim McDonald, legal director for the ACLU of Colorado State, said, quote, the courts have once again confirmed what has always been true. The Elizabeth School District cannot remove books just because they don't align with the board's preferred political beliefs, end quote. There is one picture associated with this article and has the following description. School library content and 19 suspended books were a main focus of the August 26, 2024 Elizabeth Board of Education working session. Board members read aloud excerpts from some of the books on the suspended list. President Rhonda Olson read aloud from, quote, 13 Reasons Why, end quote, YouTube screenshot. And it is a picture of Rhonda sitting at a microphone in a podium reading off a piece of paper. Rail Trail Project aims to boost connectivity, safety. Sustainability is among the goals of Englewood Initiative, written by Elizabeth Slay, eSlay at ColoradoCommunityMedia.com. The city of Englewood is moving forward with a proposed infrastructure project known as the Rail Trail, which is intended to improve connectivity, safety, and transportation options throughout the community. The Rail Trail is a proposed 2.5-mile-long multi-use path that would run along the Southwest Rail Corridor. Mike Roman, engineering manager for the city, said the project includes key design features aimed at separating different types of traffic. Quote, two pedestrian bridges will be included in this design to separate cyclists and pedestrians from vehicular traffic, end quote, Roman said. Quote, the bridges will span Hamden Avenue and Dartmouth Avenue to connect the rail trail, end quote. The trail is planned to extend from West Bates Avenue and connect to the Big Dry Creek Trail, located just west of the South Windermere Street and West Layton Avenue intersection. The concept for the trail was originally identified in the city's Walk and Wheel Plan, which outlines goals for increasing non-motorized transportation infrastructure across Englewood. Quote, the project will provide several key benefits to the community, end quote, Roman said. First, it will enhance walkability throughout the city by developing a network of non-motorized trails and paths. These pathways will be designed to be safe and separated from vehicular traffic, ensuring secure connectivity across Englewood, end quote. Roman also noted that the trail is intended to improve access to public transit in the city. Quote, additionally, the project will help increase ridership on the RTD transit options within Englewood, making public transportation more accessible and efficient for residents, end quote, he said. The project also aligns with broader safety goals. Quote, ultimately, the project aims to achieve a goal of zero vehicular, pedestrian, and cyclist deaths, fostering a safer and more sustainable environment for all, end quote, Roman said. To date, the city has funded 30% of the project's design phase through its general fund. That phase of the work was completed in February. The city is now working with the consultant to pursue grant funding in order to complete the full design and move the project toward construction. No timeline has been confirmed, as the project advancement will depend on the outcome of the grant applications and future funding decisions. There is one picture associated with this article that has the following description. A concept map of Englewood, AOS proposed rail trail project. Courtesy of Mike Roman. Thank you for joining us today for Arapahoe County News, read by Austin.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.